WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Protein degradation can target and destroy cancer-causing proteins right inside the cell. It's how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere. WNYC Studios is supported by the Public Theater, presenting the world premiere of Jordans, a new play by Ife Olujobi about two young black colleagues forced together and torn apart by their race, ambition, and otherworldly circumstances. Directed by Whitney White, begins April 11th. Learn more at publictheater.org.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Oh, God. I guess this was my fault. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe I just didn't explain the nest egg well enough. If you had understood, you know, it's a very sacred thing, the nest egg. And if you had understood the nest egg principle, as we will now call it, in the first of many lectures that you will have to get, because if we are to ever acquire another nest egg, we both have to understand what it means. The egg is a protector like a god, and we sit under the nest egg, and we are protected by it. Without it, no protection. Want me to go on? It pours rain. Hey, the rain drops on the egg and falls off the side. Without the egg, wet, it's over. But you didn't understand it, and that's why we're where
we
are.
I understood the nest egg.
Well, please do me a favor. Don't use the word. You may not use that word. It's off limits to you. Only those in this house who understand nest egg may use it. And don't use any part of it either. Don't use nest. Don't use egg.
And that's the nest egg principle scene from the Albert Brooks movie Lost in America. It's our family meeting about retirement on The Brian Lehrer Show, and now a retirement reality check for people of all ages. Maybe someone didn't explain the nest egg to you, including when should you start an IRA rather than pay down your student loans, how much is really enough money to retire on, and much more with two guests, Lynette Kalfani-Cox, author of AskTheMoneyCoach.com, and Robert Brokamp, personal finance expert at The Motley Fool. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC.
It's great to be here.
Good to be on the show.
So, Lynette, retirement seems so remote to young workers. We've heard a few examples of that during the show. At what age should people start saving for retirement?
Ideally, when they get that first job, as soon as possible. There's so much benefit and upside to starting earlier rather than later. But the trick, of course, is for most young people who get out of school, they're dealing with, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of student loan debt. They're navigating the financial independence that comes with being on their own for the first time and not necessarily always turning to the bank of mom and dad. And then, of course, they're juggling today's bills. So they're thinking about the rent, the utility bills, the cell phone, the car note if they have a car, of course, entertainment and lifestyle issues as well. So the idea of retirement for them is like, oh, that's decades away. So the tendency, of course, is to procrastinate. But again, ideally, you would really start, you know, once you get that first job, because then you can just put a little bit away now for a great deal of financial security later.
So listeners, your retirement reality check questions for Lynette Kalfani-Cox and Robert Brokamp, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Advice dispensed here for the next few minutes. And Natalie in Montclair has a question. Hi, Natalie, you're on WNYC.
Hi. So I'm in college right now, and I work in retail. And my job offers a 401k plan where you can, you know, you put aside how much you want in retirement and they'll match it for you. And that seems pretty good to me. I don't really know that much about retirement plans. But I also am funding my own way through college. So my job directly pays for college. So I don't know if I should do that because I don't make that much as it is because it's, you know, I work as a part-time sales associate.
Right. So Robert Brokamp, pick up where Lynette left off. And here's exactly that kind of dilemma I was laying out before about paying down student loans. This is even before student loans or saving for retirement.
Robert? Now, the student loans are a big issue. And I would say, in my opinion, you should be using any of that money to save for paying for college so that when you graduate, you don't have that anchor around your neck of the school loans. One thing to consider, though, would be if the contributions to the 401k are matched, meaning when you put in some money, your employer then adds some money.
Yes,
in
her case.
Half.
There's a one-for-one.
Right. So that's a great benefit, and also contributing to a 401k has tax benefits. So that's something to consider, maybe along the lines of what Lynette suggested, in that you just do a little bit. But if I had to choose just one or the other, I would go with saving for paying for college.
And Natalie, it sounds like those are the things that are opposed in your case. It's either having more money to pay for college right now versus putting away the beginning of your nest egg that's going to be matched. Are you going to have to borrow the difference to get yourself through college if
yes.
you do put away this 401k?
Yeah. Right now, I'm lucky. I go to Montclair State and I got some scholarships, but I generally every semester pay out of pocket. And if I went through how much I make over the summer, and if I put away money, I will have to take out more money than I would if I didn't.
From savings or from an actual loan?
A loan.
So, well, I mean, that's really a dilemma, Lynette, right?
It is, but one thing let's sort of hone in on. Natalie, were you saying your employer would also provide you with some educational assistance?
No.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I thought you were going to say
just the one-for-one match on the 401k.
On the 401k side exclusively. Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of people who are in your situation who are thinking, in a nutshell, it boils down to the question, Is this all worth it? Whatever I have to borrow, how can I be sure that I'm going to get a sort of decent return on my investment, the investment being college, and the amount of money that you're going to have to borrow? I think you should look at it holistically and maybe think about a couple of benchmarks. We know right now that there's a staggering amount of student loan debt outstanding in America, about $1.2 trillion. Which is just a mind-boggling amount. By some statistics, the average grad is coming out of school now with about $30,000 in student loan debt. Some more, and that's based on 2012 data, frankly. The more recent numbers that have been crunched suggest for the class of 2014, those grads have over $33,000 in student loan debt. So this is not an insignificant amount of money we're talking here. I think you have to think about what is your career likely to be, what is your first year, second year, third year salary likely to be. So many times students overestimate what their starting salaries will be, and they underestimate what their starting expenses will be when they're independent. In general, I've heard a lot of financial experts say that you should sort of not borrow in excess of what your first year salary will be. And I think that's kind of a good guideline. So if you think, my first year salary will be $35,000, overall you don't want to borrow over the course of 4 years, or if it'll be 5 years that you're in school, you don't want to borrow more than $35,000. That's a benchmark. I like to see it even lower than that, especially because in our neck of the woods, it's just so very costly.
And the
Northeast, of course, is atypical in terms of higher education and cost of living expenses as well.
Natalie, I hope that was helpful advice, and good luck out there. And Monica in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Monica.
How are you?
Okay.
So I am 35 years old, have two kids. My husband and I work, and we're just making ends meet. And I would love to start a retirement fund. I would love to start planning as of now. It seems really hard, and I don't know. It seems like you need a lot of money to actually have enough come retirement. And I was just wondering, you know, how much do you need to put aside to make a dent down the road?
So Robert Brokamp, here's one of the eternal questions. How much does a person need to retire? Let's say if we anticipate living to 90.
Right. So one rule of thumb is that you would need about 20 to 25 times your annual income need. So in retirement, if you need a certain amount of money each year, you would need 20 to 25 times that to retire. That's an awfully large amount. And the truth is, what retirement looks like is changing, especially for people of Monica's age, in that instead of retiring at a certain age and stopping work altogether. People are sort of phasing into it and realizing that if you retire in your 60s and you're going to live to your 90s, that's 30 years of not having a job, of not knowing exactly how you're going to spend your time, a lot of uncertainty. So I think you will see that people retire later or only part-time, which would change that rule of thumb, and you may not need quite that much to at least begin phasing out of work and enjoying a little more free time but still being engaged in the workforce, having benefits, making money.
So 20 or so times, not what you make today at the peak of your career, whatever that is, but 20 times what you think you will need to live on in retirement?
Exactly, and that's 20 times what you'll need from your savings, not including what will be covered by a pension or Social Security.
Which assumes sort of you're going to live for about 20 years after you retire, and you're going to take 1/20th of that each year. And then so you would subtract from that need whatever your likely pension is, if you have a pension coming to you, plus Social Security, or being able to live off the interest or the dividends from your savings?
Exactly. And someone of Monica's age would actually ask the very good question of how much can she expect from Social Security. And for people in their 30s, what I think is the smart thing to do is assume that you will get half of your projected benefit. A lot of people think, I'm not going to get anything from Social Security, but that's not true. But it's probably not going to be as much as you're currently projected to get.
Let me get another call in here, and we can go to you, Lynette, with Fantosh in Hewlett. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, Brian. Great show.
Thank you.
I think we are on the other end of the spectrum here. For a lot of people who are laid off after the recession and stuff like that, it has been very hard now that we are approaching our mid-40s and 50s to find a permanent, stable, quote-unquote, lifelong job. So it's always a part-time or, like an hourly rate job. What advice would your guests have for the rest of us out there who still want to save but are finding it a little bit more difficult to navigate the path?
Lynette?
Well, a couple of things. One is you raise a good question because people are forced to retire frequently much earlier than they had planned. EBRI, the Employee Benefits Research Institute, has done a lot of research into this, and basically they found that almost half of all people retire earlier than they intend or than they plan to. And as this caller just mentioned, some of it is due to downsizing. About 1 in 5 of them is due to people who had the business closed or whatever. So for earlier folks who still are in the game and who are still kind of working, plan as if that job might not be around for as long as you think. Save, of course, a little more aggressively. For folks who are older, as this caller just mentioned, and who are having trouble sort of getting back into full-time employment or into a comparable paying job, I think I would suggest two things. One is that you've really got to adjust your budget and take a really hard look at lifestyle expenses and discretionary expenses versus, of course, the mandatory things that must be paid. And then I would say get creative and be willing to open your mind to other possibilities. Certainly, Brian, your guest on before us was talking about retiring overseas and in other places that are, more affordable. But it could be – that could be a great option for some folks. But it could also be just like – maybe consider moving outside of the New York metro area that, maybe the Midwest or the Southwest or areas in the South that have a much cheaper cost of living, that if you find your Social Security check, your savings, and your current income streams aren't enough to make it, to be able to sustain you,
right,
consider other options.
And that, of course, raises dilemmas about, like, how far do people want to be from their families and mm-hmm. stuff in order to live more cheaply. Hugh in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Hugh.
Hello, how are you?
Okay.
I always listen to your show.
Thank you.
I'm 31, and I'm actually considering – I got about $60,000 saved up, and I'm actually considering using that money to buy property with like a 15-year – with a 15-year mortgage with the hope that later on it will give me return income to support my retirement.
So is your question that versus a 401k?
Exactly, because inflation is going to go on, and taxes are definitely going to go up, and if my 401k money – If all that happens and I can't afford, then I'll have less money saving and I have more buying power today.
Hugh, thank you. So, Robert, I wonder if the calculus is changing on whether real estate, property, is the hedge against inflation long term that it was in the last few generations.
It's certainly something to consider. Obviously, as we saw in the late 2000s, it's not always a hedge and it can go down in value. And that's one of the big concerns in terms of investing in property. And it sounds like Hugh will be investing in maybe one property, maybe two, is that that's not a lot of diversification. Property is very illiquid in case he needed the money. So I don't think it's a bad idea to factor property into the overall picture, but I wouldn't put my entire savings in one or two properties.
I agree, especially because there are still ongoing costs associated with holding the property. There's maintenance expenses, property taxes, of course, that he mentioned. It's an aspect, and it's something to consider, but I wouldn't make it the sort of cornerstone or the kind of bedrock of a retirement planning option. If I could say one other thing, I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on what Robert was saying about the calculus and thinking ahead for how much you'll need in retirement. One thing I think that a lot of Americans haven't really thought about, and I wrote about this actually today on my site, is about other costs that they're likely to have in retirement. And you brought up before about Social Security and about what the expectations might be on that front. You know, right now the average Social Security recipient retiree is getting about $1,200 or so. But most of them have not at all thought about their health care costs, for example. So when you have a lot of planners who are saying, let's project out to age 90, as you mentioned, Brian. Mm-hmm. Some even go to age 100 to make sure that their clients don't run out of money. They're thinking about things like your housing expenses, your food, your utilities, but most of them haven't even thought about, okay, well, what about health care and how much is this going to cost you? And so that's why I actually wrote about this, as I mentioned today, because...
Also, people wrongly assume that Medicare covers everything until they get there and they find out it doesn't.
Exactly. HealthView Services just did a white paper that basically showed, you know, for the average couple, who, let's say the one who's going to retire a year from now, about 70% of their Social Security benefits are going to be eaten up by health care costs. And in a decade from now, pretty much their entire Social Security check, 98% of it, is going to be consumed by just the health care costs alone.
That's amazing. The last word. Lynette Calfani-Cox, co-founder of AskTheMoneyCoach.com, and Robert Brokamp, personal finance expert at The Motley Fool. Thank you both very much. And that's our Brian Lehrer Show family meeting on retirement.
To the murmur of the cottonwood trees, send me off forever, but I ask you,